Hey guys, in today's episode, I'm joined by my good friend Bob, and we are actually walking around outside, for a walk around Tokyo.
We just finished lunch, so that's why.
Yeah, this is a wonderful activity to do in Tokyo. Tokyo is one of those places where you can basically walk across the entire city on foot. Mm-hmm. And you've done it, right?
I've done it, yeah. I've done it from Kichijoji, which is at the end, the tip of the Tokyo 23 ward, and all the way to Chiba, which is another prefecture.
That's amazing.
Yeah, 38 kilometers, actually.
That's crazy. So, okay, to give you guys more context, Bob isn't just some random guy that walks around the city. You actually are a creator yourself, right, Bob?
Yeah, I have a channel, Tokyo Gogo Look, so it's about traveling inside Tokyo, and then basically by walking.
Wow, that's amazing. And so this channel, do you run it by yourself? Is it in English? I know the answers to these questions, but maybe you can provide more context to the people listening.
Yeah, so I have a friend. He's now living in Taiwan, so he's not living in Tokyo anymore. His name's Wayne. So we do it together by showing the Taiwanese people, basically, how Tokyo is like.
So, that's cool.
Yeah, our target is Taiwanese people, so we speak Chinese. So if you understand Chinese, please subscribe.
I think a lot of people who are listening to this, you know, a lot of my audience is Asian descent. A lot of people understand Chinese, so I think they'd be excited to check your channel out to see a perspective of, you know, a Taiwanese national living in Tokyo.
Yeah.
So why don't you just kind of give us a little bit of your backstory? How you came here to Japan?
Okay.
What do you do? This kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I travel here a lot, like 10 times before I decided to move here. I finally understand that, there's a way I can come here without, you know, go to schools or finding a job, or get a job already. It's through one thing called Working Holiday. So I joined the program in 2012 and then came here. And then Working Holiday visa is 1 year, but I already know that I want to stay here forever. So I utilized that chance to find a full-time job in Shinjuku.
So taking a step back, what made you decide before you even came here that you wanted to live here forever?
I like this city, Tokyo, and then...
Had you been here before?
Yeah, 10 times for traveling.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the city is great, and then people are nice, and then it's a van city.
Did you have a preconceived notion of what Japan was going to be like before you came here? Like from movies and anime, things like that?
Actually, it's kind of the same as what I expected, because I traveled here 10 times before I moved here. So I kind of like know what the city is like. So I know that this is a city I'm going to enjoy for the rest of my life.
Wow. And then after 10 times of going back and forth, you're like, okay, I need to make a plan.
Yeah.
I want to live here at least for several years.
Yeah.
And you set about executing that plan by coming here on the working holiday visa.
Yes.
I think this visa is not available for every single country.
No.
So you guys who are listening should check, just Google your country plus Japan working holiday visa to see if you qualify. But for you, what was the process like for applying for that visa?
Oh, it's very easy. I think you can download like forms on the internet, and then see if you have. I think you can probably go to like the embassy's website, and then they have like this form you can download. So it's just type for working holiday, and then search for it, and then all you need to do is just fill out back in 2012, 2011, is just write some answers like why do you want to, you know, come to Japan and what are you going to do in Japan, and then just submit the form, and then there's like a lottery session from and then they just draft you, and then you got it and you come here.
Do you know what the percentage chance of getting that working holiday visa is?
In 2012, I think you have very high chance, because there was the earthquake. So a lot of people, actually, Japan's losing a lot of foreign people, and a lot of people don't want to come here because of, you know, radiation. So by applying during that period of time, so it was kind of easy to get into. But now I think it's, at least for Taiwanese, it's a little bit difficult, because now more and more people are wanting to move here.
Oh, that makes sense.
So I don't know the chance, actually.
So that's definitely one of the ways to come here, right? So you came here on a working holiday visa.
Yes.
Did you have a lot of money saved up to come live here? Was it very difficult for you to adjust? Like, what was this whole process of the first months like?
I only saved up, I think, $4,000 when I moved here, because, you know, I'm was born in Taiwan, so the salary is pretty low, so it's difficult to save money. So for $4,000
US limit. Converted, yeah. Right? Okay.
Yeah. So it's Yongjuman, if you say, if you may. And then, yeah, it's so difficult. Yeah, although I have the idea that, you know, if I cannot find a job, I'll just stay in Japan for 1 month and have fun and then move back to Taiwan.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you thought, okay, well, if this doesn't work out, I'm just going to go back and figure something out from there, right?
Yeah, because I was trying to find a full-time job. So I know, and I know it was quite difficult to find a full-time job.
Yeah.
But I just don't, I try not to, I don't want to work doing a part-time. I just right. want to do a full-time. So if I cannot find a full-time job, just enjoy myself here and then move back.
How did you find that job?
Oh, it's through a friend. So I actually spend the money very quickly because I know that I need to, you know, make friends.
Okay.
And then, you know.
So you were strategic about it, actually. You were like, okay, I'm not just going to have fun. I'm going to go out, but try to meet people.
Yeah.
Because that's really smart.
I know if I, you know, spend too much time in finding a part-time job and then to work like convenience store, it will take us too much of my time, and then it's difficult to save money, and then so which means I will have no chance to meet up with people. So I'd rather use that month to spend all the money I could meeting up new friends, meeting up new people, and see if there's any opportunities I can find a full-time job.
So what kind of places did you go to?
I make a lot of friends. So I have, like, for example, I have first Japanese friend, and he'll bring me to,
Where did you meet that first friend? I think that's one thing a lot of people wonder about. How do I make that first friend?
I was kind of lucky because the Japanese friend, actually, I met the guy in Taiwan a few years back. And then when I come to Japan, you know, he becomes my friend.
That's a really, really, really good strategy, actually.
Yeah.
And I've experienced this phenomenon where, you know, people who come to your country from Japan, right?
Yeah.
And then you become friends with them there. You are providing that favor to them that they then feel, you know, they would feel a little bit obligated when you go back to return the favor. So like, yeah. I'm not saying like you should make friends in your country to give them an obligation.
Yeah.
It just seems to be that it's a really, really good way, a smooth way to get your foot, to get your feet on the ground and figure your life out in Japan, right?
Yeah, so definitely, when you have a first friend, they'll bring you to that any kind of social gathering he has, if he doesn't mind, and you'll meet more people.
Yes, and what I noticed too is that the Japanese people who tend to leave the country, and let's say they want to go live in Taiwan, or they want to go do a working holiday in America or Canada or something like that, they tend to be very globally minded and very, very proactive about meeting people.
Yeah.
And those kind of people would be the best people to make friends with.
Definitely, yeah.
So you had that friend, you came here to Japan, you hit them up, and you're like, hey man, I'm in Japan, let's hang out, right?
Yeah, kind of like that, yeah. The story is longer, but yeah, in a nutshell, it's like this. Yeah, so he brought me to his friends, and then his friend's friend brought me to his friend's friend, and then, you know, come to the network.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you can find opportunities.
What kind of places did you hang out at the beginning?
It depends on where he brought me to. So it could be izakaya, or it could be like like picnic, it could be like everywhere.
So this is cool. So there's a lot of like different types of social gatherings.
Yeah.
You have, you know, people will go drinking after work at izakayas or on the weekends. They might take you to another bar or like to go clubbing or something.
Yeah.
Or they might take you to like a hanami, which is a cherry blossom picnic.
Yeah.
And that's a really, really great place to meet all kinds of different people.
Yeah, and people like, got drunk and then become like more open. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah, once people have a few beers, it's really easy to be friends with them.
Yeah.
So you made like these few friends, and then you were able to source a job?
Yeah.
What kind of position was that?
It was a marketing job in a small trading company. So in Shinjuku.
Okay.
We only have like 20, 30 people. But yeah, it's a full-time job.
And it was a Chinese-speaking job, I guess, because you are, you know, Taiwanese national.
Yeah, it's a Chinese-speaking job, and it happened to need to have a person who can also speak English. So I can speak a little bit English. I don't speak Japanese, but they are trying to expand to the U.S. territories.
Ah, I see.
And Chinese territory, so yeah, I was hired.
Wow, and so right now, just to take a quick break to explain where we are for you guys listening here, the nice bristling of the trees. We're walking through this really nice little park here in Tokyo. The nice thing about Tokyo is there's all these greenery and wonderful lush little parks in between all of the concrete buildings, right?
Yeah.
So, great place to go for walks.
Yeah, so this is Arisugawa Kinen Koen. So this is situated in Hiro, Tokyo.
Yep.
And then it has, I think they have most trees. The density of the tree is highest.
Wow.
So inside the park, you can there's no way for you to see the concrete buildings.
Yeah, you can't even hear the cars.
Yeah.
All I hear is the rustling of that little waterfall.
Yeah.
And the beautiful little wood fence and these kind of like cobbled stone steps.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a nice little break from city life.
Yeah.
Just in the middle of the city. It's amazing. So sorry to cut you off. Let's go back to your story. And so you found a position.
Yeah.
And at what point did you decide to start making a YouTube channel?
Because I always like walking. I have the habit when I was in Taiwan. And then I walk around the city or walk around the area. And I feel like that, you know, I can walk. And I notice, actually, I feel like I know the city better than and anyone else. And I did a SWOT analysis of myself.
What is that for people listening?
Strengths, weakness, opportunity, and threat.
So this is actually a type of business analysis that, well, you can apply to any area of your life. Usually businesses will do it when they're thinking about starting up a business. And so in this case, you basically are, in a sense, right? You're thinking about starting up a channel.
Yeah.
Right? Which, to you at the time, did you think, okay, I want to make this channel that's going to be successful, and I'm going to be this successful, famous YouTuber? Was that on your mind at the time, or did you think about it more just as, you know, I want to just show stuff?
It was actually on my mind first time, because I always want to do something that is, you know, I don't want to do like a full-time job or work in a corporate structure.
Yep.
So, yeah, I did do the SWOT analysis for myself. So, first of all, how many Taiwanese people are living in Japan? Or in Tokyo, they're probably around 10,000, right?
Right.
So out of these 10,000, what percentage of them makes video? I don't think there's a lot. Maybe just 5%.
Yep.
Or even 2%.
Yep.
And among these 2%, who would like to show their faces in front of camera? Maybe even a little bit, you know, little. So, and then among these 1%, how many people really actually knows Japan and walks in Japan?
Right.
Probably it's only, you know, 1% among these 1% people.
Yes.
So I feel like it probably will be good for me. I'm probably the one who can make this kind of channel.
So essentially you reasoned to yourself that you were one of the only people capable of producing content for an audience in Taiwan about content in Japan.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, for me that was kind of similar too, right? I mean, I had kind of realized when I was out in the mountains, just me, the only foreigner up in the toge with these Japanese drifters. I was like, there's nothing like this on YouTube. Well, that's a good first step, right? You check YouTube, it doesn't exist. You're like, okay, I have a unique opportunity here. So at the time, I didn't really know too much about making videos. How about you? Were you very experienced?
Yeah, I was very experienced. Back in Taiwan, I producing some online commercials with several companies, so I know how to edit and then how to do project management and how to be a producer and how to be a director.
Okay. How did you learn those skills to get that first job in Taiwan?
Actually just through my own experience, because I don't know the word, if this good word or bad word, but you know, I want to make some money when I was in college, so you know, I know a little bit of editing skill, movie maker. But I think that I can give it a try. So I actually joined a lot of a movie filming contest.
Yeah.
As a bounty hunter.
Ah, I see.
So I'll find like easy target, I should say.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't join like a big film festival or something, because I know I'm not going to win.
Yeah.
So I joined like the easy one, and there was a little bit of prize money so that I can dedicate myself in learning more editing skill.
Yes, and it gives you a goal to strive towards.
Like,
if you win, you're like, I did it. I beat everybody. And that really gives you the confidence that you're capable, right?
Yeah.
And it gives you the accreditation to go to a company and say, I won all of these, you know, these contests. And look, I'm capable.
Yeah. So after that, one of the contests I joined in is Women's Foundation. One of the Women's Foundation. I think I forgot the name exactly, but they... I joined the contest, and then they knew that, oh, my the the video I made is pretty good. So they want me, they asked me if I want to join their organization. So I said, yeah. Wow. And then I joined the organization and figured out that they're actually making a very huge nationwide concert for good cause.
Oh, okay.
So during that concert, we also want to do some marketing, right?
Right.
So I was helping them producing a lot of videos for to market the whole event.
Were you editing, shooting, cutting, everything, making the videos yourself? Or were you working with the
everything
team?
Myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because we don't have limited budget, but we have some influential people in this NPO, so we'll be able to get into, like, you know, meet all the celebrities in Taiwan.
Right.
So because of that, it was also high pressure for me, because I know that this is going to be a very big event. So I know that I have to, you know, force myself to create better content.
At the time, were you working another job, or was this your main thing?
This was my main thing, even though I not get paid, but this was actually a very good experience. So if you have any NGO, NPO around you that's doing good cause, first of all, you know, join these organizations, good cause and good for you. And then they all probably, some of them also wanted to produce videos. So yeah, you can do it for free and then good learning from yourself.
So at some point, were you juggling both a job and then this NPO stuff, NGO stuff?
Yeah, because I also need to find a full-time job, right?
Right, you actually need to work and survive,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I have to give that up. At one point to, you know, really work at a small company. But I was lucky enough because I think I joined my first job was back in 2011, where the owner of the company knows that YouTube marketing is very important. So I had a chance to, the company where I was working is producing like accessories for iPhone and iPad.
Oh.
And back then, we do have the need to, you know, send out all these accessories to tech reviewers.
Right.
So I got a chance to, you know, to know a lot of tech YouTubers. And then also my boss also asked me to produce YouTube videos for their official channel.
Yeah.
Yeah, so during my first work, I actually produced a lot of videos during that time.
And then that kind of gave you a lot of experience with editing.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
At some point while you were working that job, were you thinking, I want to leave this job and go to Japan? Or were you thinking, that was the job you were working before you came to Japan, right?
Yeah. But actually, there's 1 year gap. Because I even though the job, the boss is great, but the pay is not that high.
Yeah.
So, and I wanted to make more videos. So actually, I quit the job in 2011.
We're good. I just dropped the phone. Sorry, guys, if you just heard this massive crashing sound. Yeah. I basically threw my phone at the ground.
Okay. Where were we? Oh yeah, I quit my job in 2011. But I had a chance to start working with companies as a freelancer, making producing commercials for them.
But would you just reach out to the company, say like, oh hey, I'm a freelance producer, I can make stuff, here's what I've worked on?
So I was actually quite lucky. So what I was doing in my first job in Taiwan, right, I had a chance to meet a friend, because I was also a app reviewer for Windows Phone, because Windows Phone is not popular, so it's very easy to get recognized as a Windows Phone app reviewer.
Ah, I see.
So then I review an app for a small company on Windows Phone. And then after I finished reviewing the app, the story is a little bit long. Yeah. And then, you know, the guy, I sent out the, you know, thank you email to him, say, hey, this is a review of your app. Yeah, I really like your app. And then he reached back to me saying that, hey, thank you. And then he asked me if I'm, you know, very knowledgeable in Windows app, Windows Phone app. I said, yeah. And I said that, oh, actually, we have a event that's sponsored by Microsoft. So do you want to, you know, kind of participate in the event and then document the event and then added a short clip for us? And
oh,
I
no
say,
way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely.
A great opportunity, which kind of arose out of like one thing leads to another, which leads to another.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely, and then I'm fine with that. And I produce a video for them. And then I upload it to their own channel. And then the vice president of Microsoft Global noticed that video and then retweet that video.
That's awesome.
So Microsoft was kind of happy.
Yep.
And then asked me, hey, Bob, do you know how to make video? I said, yeah, why not? I know. And then they said, do you want to help us producing more video? I said, yeah. So that's actually the starting point of my relationship with Microsoft.
Wow.
So I not only do motion graphics for them, I also do sometimes do translations for them, and not just Windows Phone. I actually do translation and voice acting for Office, and then also for Xbox.
Wow. So just from one little connection, it can kind of blossom into all these different opportunities.
Yeah. So seize the opportunity is very important.
What is your kind of philosophy for opportunity and finding these? Because for a lot of people, they're like, oh, I know, I'm not lucky. How do they get those chances?
I'm not lucky either. Yeah. This is just one of the chances I have. But maybe I have 800 other chances I took where it's not blooming. So I would say that if there's any slight chance, just take it and see what's going on. And if the chance proves that you're not successful, and then if nothing comes out of it, it's a practice.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
it just becomes like your part of the journey is figuring stuff out. And sometimes, what I've experienced even in my own life is, you get a chance early on, and it's a really good chance, but you're just not ready yet. You're not prepared.
Yeah.
So that's why I always think that there's always two components to success. You know, you have the luck aspect, which is there's kind of this random element to it, which is also slightly controllable because you can put yourself in situations which have a higher likelihood of luck happening, right? Yeah. Like if you're in a big city like Tokyo, there's a lot more chances of opportunity in meeting people randomly than if you are out in Alaska where there's no people. So, part of it is up to you to actually put yourself in a place where there is opportunity. The other half of it, I think, is just being prepared. So if you didn't have the experience of having, editing and doing motion graphics and all these different skills that you had developed from working in these other jobs that didn't actually pay very much money, but they gave you good experience, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And then finally, when that opportunity comes along, you're like, they're like, oh, would you like to do this? And you're like, yeah, I can do it. Mm. And that's how it happens.
Mm.
Yeah. So fast forward a little bit. When you decided to start your channel, what was that like? Was it difficult for you?
It was difficult for me because I feel like I cannot do it on my own because I don't have a camera. I only know editing skill. And I'm also a little bit shy in showing my face in front of people. So I always wanted to find a partner,
a co-host,
that can help me. So I actually spent three years finding a good host. So in between, I work with several people. I think around 10 people, but they are not interested, and then they gave out their passion very easily. Until I find the current partner I have, which is Wink. But come to think of it. I'm a little bit too late in the game, but if I can start a little bit earlier, I can probably think about, persuade myself to just do it my own. I don't actually need a partner to do it.
Yep.
I need guts and confidence. That's
all. I think you don't necessarily need a partner to start and to get it going.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I feel like at some point to really grow it, you can't do it on your own. And the main reason is there's a time limitation. You only have 24 hours in a day.
Mm-hmm.
You sleep 8 of those hours.
Mm-hmm.
You work 8 of those hours. You're probably in transit for an hour back and forth each, which only leaves about 6 hours or so for to work on your channel, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So for you, has having a team been beneficial? Has it helped you move faster?
Yeah, definitely. Because we have two brains and then the partner I have, Wayne, he's good at doing marketing, where I'm a little bit, I have no knowledge about that. So we make a very good tag team because, you know, for example, I'm very good at the operational job and I making things efficiently. And then he's very good at thinking. So he's like collaborating with each other. We can, you know, make things better.
So those are definitely some really good benefits. What are some of the pitfalls and kind of difficulties that you encounter when working as a team, especially when you guys are both working on it as like together?
There's no risk I can think of right now. It's just like maybe it's if there's a project that we take, then we need to split our salary to half. That's all.
Yep.
Yeah, because it took me a long time to find a very good partner.
Yeah, it's like a marriage.
Yeah, it's like a marriage. Yeah, but we haven't opened a company yet, so maybe when we open a company, things will come up. But at least, you know, working together as a tag team for our channel, I don't see any big issues coming. Like there will be small issue that we have like different opinions about what this channel that we need to proceed. But like we always do, we'll try both. Why not, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. And you can kind of just keep growing together and learning together. And hopefully, you know, things work out. In the future, what kind of company do you see yourself running?
Still a little bit too early to answer this question, but we are thinking about a few ways. So first of all, we can open like a traveling company. So we can take like foreigners here and then bring them to any of the tours that we feel that is fit for them. That's one. The other thing is that we'll continue to grow Tokyo Go Go Look. So we can open, for example, London Go Go Look, Montreal Go Go Look. Then in each big city, we'll have a team there, located there, and introduce a whole city to the viewers. Yeah,
that's great. That makes perfect sense. And you know, I wish you well. It's really cool to, I mean, even for me, even though we're not on a team, just having a friend who I can talk to about YouTube things and kind of the difficulties of growing your own brand, it's incredibly invaluable. So I think for any of you guys listening who are thinking about starting something like this, it's kind of like, for me, it's kind of like when you make a commitment to work out or you start going to the gym, you'll have a massively higher chance of success if you have a workout partner who's equally committed. And so you can both motivate each other to keep going on those days that you don't feel like going.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah. So what does the future of Tokyo Go Go look hold? Or the future of Bob?
Future of me?
Yeah.
I'm still working in a company, so still earning money from there. But, you know, I don't like I said, I don't like corporate job. I have to because I don't have enough funds to open a company.
Yep.
But when I have enough funds, I'll open a company for Tokyo Go Go Look.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's one of the wonderful things about, you know, the world that we live in today, where through your passion, through your interest, whatever hobby you have, whatever you really love to do, what you find yourself doing, you know, after work, when you're just on your phone, what kind of things you research, there's an opportunity for you to become like a leader or an expert in that field, like you did, you know, just walking around, you realize, oh, wow, I'm knowledgeable about this stuff. This is what I already love to do. I can build a business around this that could, you know, one day support my lifestyle and put food on a table. And I think that's like the ultimate thing, where you don't have to you know, live by the corporate demands of that quarter, your manager and his manager's manager, like what they decree for the success of the company. You know, you have real actual agency over the direction of your own life. So I think that's something we should all strive for.
Yeah, at this age, you know, everyone can be a creator. Everyone has a phone or even has a like sloppy camcorder. Or if you want to do a podcast, if you have your own voice, if you have a phone, if you have any recorder, you can be popular. Yeah, you don't have to rely on corporate job. And then, like, for people who doesn't want to be controlled, their life be controlled by corporate world, I highly recommend just start something from the very beginning and try it and see how it goes.
What if it takes a very long time?
I mean, then it takes a very long time. Yeah, then do it, stick to that, and then one day you will see the result.
For me, a lot of my viewers recently in the Discord chat, you know, I have a channel in that Discord chat called Real Talk, I believe. And the idea of this channel is for people to talk about, you know, their concerns with real life, and hopefully I can give them some advice, and the other people who are a little bit more experienced in life can give them some advice. And one of the constant themes I see is you have people who are like 22, 23, you know, maybe they dropped out of school, maybe they didn't finish the course that they had originally set out to do, and they're like really depressed because they're like, oh, I failed to do this engineering course or whatever. Like, what would you say to those people?
Don't feel discouraged if you drop out of school, or if you are not successful, or if you don't have money to go to good schools. I mean, again, at this day and age, if you try hard, you can always find resources online, or you can learn from a friend, and then you don't necessarily need the certificate or
accreditation.
Yeah. Again, start it on your own.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what you're saying is, like, let's say you went to like a school for accounting, right? I mean, yeah. I went to school for like accounting, and I ended up changing my major.
Yeah.
You know, like, on one level, you're just saving your future self more headache and more heartache. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, thank God you got out now after 4 years instead of actually getting into that job and discovering that you hate it after you've accumulated like $100,000 in debt, and now you're chained to that job. You know, that's the thing about this world that we live in. You can start something on your own, which could make more money than that corporate job if you work hard.
Yeah.
And that's a really wonderful thing. I think that's what we like to, for my part at least, what I like to leave off with. How about you, Bob? Is there anything you want to talk about or ask me? Or I'll leave it to you now. So think of this as your podcast.
I think I'm fine, because I think me and Albert, we always have the same idea, because we had a talk in the past that we started filming actually the same year.
Yeah.
And then we started to have the idea of, you know, creating a channel actually probably the same year as well. Yeah, so we've been through the same situation. We're all both of us are working in a corporate job. But, you know, that being said, even though the pay is okay and then the work is steady, but we don't want it to be, you know, constrained by the managers even though you are high performance, but if the company decided to change one direction and your life is gone, maybe. So that's why we also feel like kind of threatened in our life. Yeah. So that's why we're trying our best to, you know, create something on our own.
Yes, and yes.
Yeah, so we have the same path. So that's why, you know, I walk with him and we talk about this every day. But today's in a podcast form.
Yeah, and it's really fun too, right? Yeah. It's fun to have a conversation about this. And for some reason, I feel like podcasting is one of those mediums where you seem to have better conversations when it's a podcast. I don't know why. I just feel more eloquent and more measured in my thoughts. And because I want the people listening to get some value out of this time that they're spending with us. So I think it's a really cool thing. And I think, you know, just to circle back around to answer my question that I proposed to you about, you know, what would you say to these 22, 23-year-olds who are unsure about their life? Man, I would say, I would switch places with anybody who's 22 years old to have those 10 years back. To go back 10 years and like have the chance to do this again.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, there was a lot of different pitfalls and like difficulties and challenges, but to have the chance to relive all the things that I wanted to do in like my 20s, oh man, I would switch, you know. So for you guys are young as fuck. Like, oh man, 22, 21 and feeling like depressed, like, get the fuck out of here. Like, you have the world open in front of you. You know, you're listening to this podcast, go Google how to do whatever. And I guarantee you, within like 3 or 4 years, if you work hard, you can become world class at anything, pretty much.
Yeah, definitely. So we listen to Gary Vee a lot. And then we are on the way, hopefully, to become like Gary Vee. And everything he says, kind of, I say it's, for me, it's true. Yeah, because when you're 20, I think when you're 23 and 24, even you're a little bit younger, don't be afraid of losing. Just try.
Yep.
Try as best as you can. And then also, I think one more thing is important, that you have to make good friends, and then that can, you know, you can talk to, and friends that support you, and then friends that can bring the benefits to you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the most important things in my experience. You have to surround yourself with people who actually want to succeed, and also, this is a weird one, that want you to succeed, right? Because a lot of so-called friends, they like to have you around if you stay in the place in the hierarchy of your friend group. So once that friend group gets stabilized and you have found like your place, let's say within this group of friends, you've always been a bit of like the joker, right? And so like your self-image is you're this joker, you're not this high achiever kind of type guy. But let's say you listen to this podcast and you think, okay, you know, enough's enough. I got like this, like, one fucking life. I need to do something about this to get my shit together. What you're gonna find often is that when you try to break out of the mold of, you know, that life that you're already in, your closest friends or the people you spend the most time with will try to shoot down your ideas. And there's a very, very interesting concept of, you know, crabs in a bucket. So when you have a bunch of crabs and you put them in a bucket, whenever one of the crabs will try to crawl its way out, even though it can reach to get out, the other crabs will grab that crab and pull him back. So this is kind of like the basic phenomenon with like a lot of like human interaction. You need to find those other people who are also interested in becoming successful, basically.
Yeah. I think always feel a sense of urgency, that even though the surroundings is a very safe, and then maybe you have a steady job, or maybe you have a steady everything. I mean, some people will be happy, but if you want to success, if you want to be one of a kind in the future, then always have a sense of urgency. And so that if you have that kind of urgency, then you can, you know, force yourself to try things.
Yes, absolutely. So we'll leave that piece of food for thought for you guys, and hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Bob, is there anything you'd like to end off with?
I'm fine. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast.
Awesome. And thank you guys so much. Once again, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give the other podcast episodes a chance. We'll try to do more of these and make them more entertaining for you. Let me know. Reach out to me somehow. Tweet at me at Drift Hunter Albo. Some ideas for the podcast, or if you enjoyed it. And just say hi. So we hope you enjoyed this. We'll catch you guys in the next one. All right. Peace.
Peace.